What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have soon-to-be husband, the head coach of Cathedral High School.
This is my first year.
First year going into it.
Second year going into it.
So we just completed his first year. I knew I wasn't that crazy.
We just finished season.
Second year, and a coach with the BTI club program, Mr. Alex Liu, my guy.
Appreciate you having me.
I just want to make this very clear. He is the first Asian, full Asian, shout out Christian Juzang, on the show. 100% Chinese.
100% Chinese.
Represented. So we're opening it up, making sure that we touch all the communities inside of basketball. So wanted to make that point.
Yeah.
We start this show off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
Coach Carter. You know, a lot of the lessons that he taught those guys and standing 10 toes down. And he's willing to lose games and do whatever is best for those guys, you know, to be able to give them what's best and learn their lessons that can just help them, you know, beyond life and things like that. So I think in today's age too, you know, a lot of kids can really use that and, you know, use that to flourish and have that kind of support for them, you know, as they continue on through their lives.
100%. I know a lot of coaches who wouldn't do what he did. I think that's the difference in being a coach, a teacher, somebody who's really guiding a kid in life. Like, hey, I will take this away. Like, that's why I tell parents all the time, hey, my kid is misbehaving. He's getting bad grades. I said, don't give him basketball. Yeah. Take basketball away. Just take him away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I promise you their behavior will change.
Oh, yeah.
And they're afraid to do it because they think they're going to miss the boat or they're going to get worse at basketball in 2 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the other day, I did get a call from, or I walked into our gym and then I talked to one of our teachers. And then the next day I got off of work and then I just sat into his class. Mm. And then seventh period basketball came along and, you know, he got the message.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, yes. It's okay to do physical conditioning for basketball.
Yeah, there you go. It is. It was for the best of us.
It's for basketball, yes. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
Definitely, probably at the age of 3. As far as I can remember, my dad kind of putting basketball in my hands. He wanted me to try a bunch of different sports. I kind of remember very vividly, he was opening up the mail one day, you know, at home. He was like, hey, do you want to do baseball again? I was like, no, I just want to do basketball, you know, and kind of just telling him all the time, I just wanted to go out with him and just kind of be around it all the time. Because at the time, he was still playing at the parks and stuff like that. And I would be off to the side on the side courts and stuff and shooting around and just enjoying just being around it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think at a very young age, I realized this is all I really want to do and kind of just give back to those kids too. So awesome. Really young age.
Did you grow up in LA?
I grew up in Monterey Park, Alhambra area, that San Gabriel Valley. It's a little bit smaller. Not really into the basketball culture, kind of like the San Fernando Valley like that, or like out in LA like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a little different growing up out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you took that love for basketball at an early age, and you said your father is the one who kind of showed you the game and watching. Where did youth basketball take you? Where did that open up your horizons and make you fall more in love with the game?
Yeah, so we had Asian leagues. CYC, it's kind of just, it was a Japanese league that a lot of kids kind of played in and kind of within that bubble with the Monterey Park, and it kind of spanned all throughout California as well, but it was just an Asian league as well, so it was just the kids that I was kind of familiar with and things like that. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed every moment of it. It helped spark the level of competitiveness in me. That's the biggest thing for me, is I love to compete in everything. And it was just a level of commitment and being able to be in the gym and just continue to work and make some friends along the way too, you know, and being around my community meant a lot to me too.
Yeah.
And that kind of fostered that love, you know, for the game and generally my dad just loving it as much as he did and continuing to play at that moment when he could. I was like, this is amazing, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. What feeling, because I could see your passion for it, man. What feeling does basketball give you?
Comfort, passion, love. When I'm home, I can throw on basketball in the background, whether I'm paying attention or not. When I'm working, it doesn't feel like work. Yeah. When I'm in the gym, my fiance, Tiffany, she expects now that if I tell her that I'm going to the gym at 3 o'clock and then I'll be, you know, back by around 5 or 6, she'll expect me home at 11 p.m. because she knows that I just love being in the gym and just love being around it, you yeah. know. So it's been everything for me, you know, growing up and the relationships that I've built and the people I've met. It's been amazing, you know. Yeah,
that's awesome. Short of that. That's awesome. And give me the 2-minute drill of your basketball journey as you mm-hmm. so you started in the CYC leagues, leading up to when you were done. So you got 2 minutes. Talk about, if you can, you know, where you were, the coaches had impact, and you know, where your basketball career ended.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time?
2-minute drill of your basketball journey as yeah. a player.
Just, okay.
You know, from youth to...
So from CYC, going all the way through just elementary school, once a small elementary school, Ramona Elementary. Not too many kids really, really play basketball like that as well. But then we kind of matriculated into our high schools. I kind of lived on the border, so I kind of separated from my friends at the time. So I went to like Markepel High School, and then my parents moved, so then we went over to Alhambra High School, which kind of still in that small bubble. Played freshman at Markepel for a little bit, and then my grandfather died at the time, and I kind of didn't know how to process that, you know, and kind of dealing with my emotions, so I kind of didn't play basketball that year, mm-hmm. you know. But I still loved the game. It was just at that time I was still growing, you know, as a person. I kind of didn't know what to do. So... I still found park leagues and stuff like that my freshman year. But then once we moved over to Alhambra, it was a lot easier because I had my friends with me, yeah. you know. So then I transferred over there, and then I went to Alhambra High School where I was able to be with everybody, and then I made the varsity team that year. I didn't really get to play. There was a transition during that period at Alhambra High School. Where they kind of didn't have any juniors, so it was just seniors and sophomores. And, you know, the seniors played a lot, and they did a really good job and made a lot of really good friends there. And most of my friends were sophomores, which were my year. So we were all kind of just waiting our turn and kind of just developing. And then I was trying to make that transition there. Junior year, I played, I started, and then I had to compete with somebody who was in my position, who was older. And from there, it was kind of like a battle. And then once he got really healthy, at the moment, he was a better player than me. Mm. So I got a good taste of, hey, like if you don't keep working, you know, like this could happen again.
Yeah.
So he was a really good player. And, you know, my junior year, minutes kind of came and went, you know, but I did whatever the coaches needed me to do. And then my group, we were really hungry. So like we had 5, 6, 7 guys that were just kind of waiting our turn for our moment. And then my senior year, I started every game pretty much, and we had a really good year that year. And you know, I was a big time role guy, but I played my role and I competed every single day.
Yeah.
And I miss competing still on the floor all the time. You know, I know that coaches sometimes they're just like, yeah, I don't miss playing, you know. But I love playing,
right?
And I still love being in the gym all the time. So
yeah,
that's kind of what it is.
No, it's awesome, man. There's a couple points in your story I want to highlight that you had to work through some adversity.
Yeah.
And you know, this show is all about people's journeys and mm-hmm. the different routes that you take. And you know, with your grandfather passing, and yeah. you being able to process those emotions. You know, now if you saw little Alex going through that, what would you tell him to be able to, you know, weather that storm a yeah. little bit differently and still play basketball maybe, or to be able to process, you know, something yeah. like that happening?
I just think just having somebody there just kind of let you know, you know, that everything's going to be okay. And, you know, life is fluid. It moves on. And you just got to continue to find a passion and go through life and just have that mentorship, you know, for somebody when they do need it. So I think just having somebody important in your life, you know, that will kind of guide you through it is the best part of that. Just having somebody to talk to. There's no answer every single time, right? There's just, sometimes there's just support.
Yeah.
And the best thing I can do for a lot of my guys right now is I can just be there for them, you know, whether they take the advice or not, whether or not, you know, hey, you should do this work. Hey, no matter what, you make the right or wrong decision, I'm here with you, right? And I'm here to kind of guide you through that and be that support for you.
Absolutely. And for the adults out there to be available to mm-hmm. be that person,
yeah.
What does that look like?
A lot of talks. sometimes, a lot of times being truthful with them, you know, and just being readily available mentally for them. And also, I think the most important thing about that through my journey is I had to grow as well, you know. So being there for them and spending the time, because time is something you can't get back. Yeah. And when you give time to somebody and your time is valuable like that, like spending time with them, and that's how you build the relationships. It can't just be like a check-in here and there. And like check-ins are great, right? But like when I talk to you and I spend an hour and I give you that time, you know, that means something to somebody. And, you know, it's got to be organic. Like I genuinely have to, you care about the person and you want to continue to care about the person and continue to want what's best for them. And, you know, I think love, you know, when you love the people that you're with, you know, like I said, with the decisions or not, you know, you're still there for them and just letting them know that you're there for them. That's the best part about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's speaking to you having that environment shift when you switch schools.
Yeah.
Right? You're around people that you were comfortable with, your friends, and that had that community. I talk about that a lot, just being around the right people. Like, even in my life today, where I'm headed as far as my goals, my ambitions with just life in general and my career goals,
yeah.
I'm seeing my environment change, the people I'm around
yeah.
to get to that level. The people I'm spending more time with. I told my wife, I went to Memphis for junior YBL this past weekend and had a blast. It was awesome being around the kids. Like that's my basketball is my environment for sure. Yeah. But as far as just leaving my family and not being around them, I'm like, I think I'm at that point in life where I want you guys to go with me everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I'm done with just hanging out with friends or people yeah. and you guys not being there. Like I want yeah. you to be a part of all that. So that like those, I don't know if it's maturity or just different, you know, progressions of life.
Yeah.
Those people that you're around, like for me, it's just my family. It's my wife and my kids right now. Like I just want to yeah. be around them. And then professionally as well, certain people who are not, I don't know, either you don't relate to or aren't on the same growth path
yes.
as you. And I try to tell kids that all the time. Like, hey man, if you want to be a hooper, your friends kind of got to be hoopers. Out here in Southern California,
yeah,
you know, and some parents are like, oh, I need them to have balance. Not if he's trying to be a hooper. Get with people who are hooping mm-hmm. and still have good character and yeah. still focused on their academics and still trying to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. But instead of playing video games, they want to be in the gym.
Yeah.
It changes your life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be a professional gamer too nowadays, but hey, if you want to
yeah.
hoop.
Yeah, yeah. And the rep that up. I mean, shoot, like all the time that you spend, it really adds up. Like talking to some of our guys, like I used to tell Nick Jimenia all the mm-hmm. time. He used to be frustrated with some of the results that we'd have when he would make shots and stuff like that. It's just like, well, like Steph Curry shoots 45%. This dude probably makes a million threes, yes. you know, in his lifetime. Mm-hmm. But eventually, you know, the accumulation of reps, you know, they start to show. And you know, I also think you got to earn your frustration in that too. You know, if you work hard, stuff like that, then, you know, then you get the right to be frustrated in a way, you know, but I agree. I mean, you surround yourself with the people and shoot, I want to spend all the time I can with my fiance too.
Yep, right.
And she's so important to my life, especially through my coaching journey, you know.
Does she hoop?
She did hoop.
Okay. Yeah, right,
she did hoop. So,
she
so
understands
she gets it.
Him.
She yeah. loves it. Oh man. I was like, I don't know if, you know, when our kids go and they start playing basketball, I'm like, well, at the end of the day, I know she's going to love it and she's going to support them and not be one of those parents where, you know, none of the other things where she's just like, oh, you know, I have to be here. Oh, no, like stuff like that. Like she's excited to be a team mom, I'm sure. She's just wants to be around it. She's the best.
Like that's awesome. The best. Yeah. That's awesome. And yeah, advice going into a marriage as a coach, because we have a lot of coaches who've come through this show or we've just talked to that, you know, their marriage didn't survive coaching. Yeah. And it's important, like, keep her first, keep her involved and communicate clearly and be okay with sacrificing sometimes.
Yeah.
That basketball thing and honor your wife, because it will, that's your peace. That's what actually keeps you stable in coaching, is having somebody who supports it and understands it to a certain level. And so, and my wife, listen, there's ways of doing it. My wife doesn't like basketball at all. She doesn't go to games. She doesn't eat, but she supports me doing it. She understands that I have to go to Memphis for a basketball thing and holds the fort down with the kids, and it's good. You know what I mean? There's no animosity and resentment from that. She just fully understands it, and it comes from communication. And I keep my marriage first, though. Like, I make sure, you know, I do my part around the house and the other things that basketball doesn't just consume every part of our life. So I want to give you that advice, because it, as you grow in this game, man, you're going to be, you're already a good coach. You're going to be a great coach. And so it's going to take more of your time. Mm-hmm. And so just make sure you have your, have that order, man, have your priorities straight. And so it's on camera now that I told you this. So Tiffany, if he doesn't listen, that's on him now.
Am I paying for this session too?
No, this is free. There you go. You're welcome. This is free. So how did you get into basketball coaching? So you played up to high school, you had a good experience and finished. How did you move into to the coaching space?
So I went, once I was going to college, my first year.
Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to college?
I went to Cal State Northridge.
Oh, you know? Which, not indoors?
Which it ended up being one of the best decisions ever, because it put me in this area. In the San Fernando Valley, you're taking a kid from the San Gabriel Valley, who, you know, they're playing Asian League basketball and stuff like that in that community, and jump right into the San Fernando Valley. And you know, I kind of didn't know the area very well. My first year there, I joined this organization called Coaching Core. I used to call it Corpse, but I'm not sure if it's still around right now. But it was a internship. We're all trying to help with their communications and stuff like that. And our mission was to try to get more coaches to volunteer so more kids could play.
Oh, cool.
And one of the requirements was that you had to coach a season. And of course, I wanted to coach basketball.
Right.
And once I volunteered for that, they set me up at our local YMCA around Northridge, and I coached 7 and 8 year olds for the first time.
It's the best.
Oh, it was tough.
Right.
when they set me up with that, I was very excited to start. And then later I realized that a lot of the teams that were there kind of were already together for a little while. The coaches were experienced in that regard.
You mean the dads putting their teams together?
Exactly.
The dad and the assistant coach, so the good kids can be on the same team.
Yeah,
we know what you guys do. You directly coaches.
Well, they were winning and they were doing a good job there. And we didn't win a game that year, but it was a bunch of the kids that didn't really get to play basketball. So they were able to just go and be in a gym and experience basketball for the first time. And they lived life just what's in front of them, right? Like, we could have lost that game, whatever it was, right? And then the next day they're ready to work and go back at it. Like, they didn't think about the loss at the time. They get to play basketball.
Yeah.
You know, so that coming in every day was really great to have. You know, having the kids there that were excited to play basketball, regardless of what the result was. And I was 19 years old. I didn't really know all too much, but I thought I knew more, you know? And I think, you know, when you're in that bubble, you're like, oh, I know. But until you kind of get outside of that box and experience it for yourself, especially coaching 7 and 8 year olds,
That's real coaching.
Yeah, and you got to bring energy every day. You got to be excited. You got to be enthusiastic. Then you got to make sure they're not running off and just doing everything on the side too.
A little bit of babysitting in there. Yeah.
Exactly. And then, just being able to do that. And I was never afraid to ask, the other coaches after, hey, what do you guys do and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I started incorporating that. And then I would say when I was younger, that ego was a little bit higher because I didn't know what I didn't know. I thought I knew stuff, but I started to realize through my coaching journey that I didn't know as much as I thought I did, So that went through, and then at the end of the season, the kids get the participation trophies and stuff like that, but the parents came out and they're really supportive and they loved the fact that their kids were really happy at the end of it. And that was really fulfilling for that. And from there, I was like, okay, I think I want to try high school coaching. Me still being the young, immature 19-year-old that I was at the time, I specifically remember going on a website because I lived near Arleta High School. And then, I put, an inquiry in there to be their head basketball coach.
Did you get the job?
I was like, I don't know what I was thinking. And right. At the time, also, when I was doing some hours when I was, in this other program at Cal State Northridge, I had to go to SOSIS, the Sherman Oaks, that school. And then I wrote down an inquiry. I was just like, hey, if you guys are looking for a basketball coach, here. Obviously, they didn't call me back, but it was a little bit delusional in that way, right? And then eventually, I found a website, the CIF website, and I saw that Valley Toro was looking for a coach. And I don't know how familiar you are with Coach Lior Schwartzberg, but I emailed him, and he got back to me right away. I didn't know that he was a first-year coach there. That was...
Oh, wow.
Rebuilding everything, and he told me pretty much it ended up him saying just stop by, and he kind of told me, hey, I'm kind of waiting for guys to if they want to come back or not, stuff like that, and why don't you just watch it, see it, see what you think. And I luckily had some semblance of maturity to where I was able to go in a dress shirt and a tie to Emick Hebrew Academy, a little middle school gym, sit in there. And within 30 seconds, I was like, I'm in. I didn't care what the money was at the time. I just saw him coaching. I saw the experience that I could have. And I was like, I'm in. I want to do this. Nice. So he sat me down after. And then the amazing person that he is, he was just like, well, he was very truthful. And he said, how can I help you, with everything that's going on in your life right now to make it work? Because high school coaching, there's not a lot of money in it, and it's a massive commitment. Mm-hmm. And from there, I think being at Valley Toro was the greatest decision that I've ever made in my life, to be with Lior Schwartzberg, because he really built my foundation as a person and as a coach. And it was the first time I ever got a mentor. When I first came in, still a little arrogant, has an ego. I was like, oh, this is how basketball should be played, blah, blah, blah. He was introducing, a good amount of sets and stuff like that. And the players were pretty good. Ryan Terrell was there his sophomore year.
Okay. So I was able to experience that. Front row seat of the Ryan Terrell.
So it was amazing.
Guy's a bucket, man.
Yeah, he's so good. Arguably still, with all the guys I've been lucky to be around and coach, He's right up there.
Oh, for sure.
Right up
for
there.
Sure. G League, playing in the G League.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went through that progression, and basically every single day I realized I didn't know as much as I knew. Lior came in with the practice plans, his level of organization. The scouting was unreal. As a tactician, as a person, as a motivator, and then as a human being as well, So he taught me everything, and every day from that point on, after my first year, I was like, I'm going to have an open mind for everything. There's nothing that I can't learn from this point on. And that kind of just took off from there, you know, and I'm just so lucky to have a person like that, because every year, even though I wasn't ready, he would encourage and empower me to like go after more. Shoot, he even told me like, hey, maybe you should try to pursue like being a head coach somewhere. I'll support you. So I was ready at the time, but but just to have somebody like that, yeah, you know, is invaluable. So from there, during that time, it was amazing. We won a good amount of games. We won the first Jewish tournament championship in school history. We actually won it back to back as well. And then after Ryan graduated, you know, I thought that I wanted to go to college because I didn't play in college. So I thought, you know, I have to experience it so I can actually teach the kids, because I always wanted to come back to high school.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, how can I help them get to the next level if I don't know what that looks like, you know? And during that time frame as well, like, that was when I also got introduced to AAU. I didn't know what AAU was. I didn't experience it. The culture of basketball is completely different.
Yeah.
So that was when I jumped into what was Earl Watson Elite at the time.
Oh, nice. Okay.
During our period of transition into West Coast Elite. And the players were different because Valley Torah, you know, you had a bunch of Orthodox Jewish kids, and it was a small school, about 100 kids, you know. So I go from that into AAU, and like a lot of the players are good.
Right.
You know, a lot of the players are good, and we competed in Division 5 AAA at the time, or AAA. I think it was AAA, AAA? I'm not quite, I don't remember, but it was way back. but yeah, we competed in the lower divisions, so being able to see all that talent, you know, was different. Like at the time, we had Nico Mannion, Josh Green, Cassius Stanley at a point, and it was like, I was like, whoa, like it's a whole nother world out there.
Right.
You know, and I couldn't get away from it. I was like, I want to be in this gym. I want to watch everything. I'll go from court to court to court to court. And I do specifically remember, because now with me being at BTI is like, I remember watching Zaire Williams. I didn't even know who he was at the time. But then that was the first time I was like, whoa, that kid's like, well, he might be an NBA player.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then, you know, some Jordan Jones and some of the kids from, like, Dream Vision, like Pierre Crockwell and, like, all those guys. Like, I was like, whoa, like, wow, this is high-level basketball. Josh Christopher, Jaime Jaquez when they're at the Truth and stuff.
Man,
like
this
that.
Is crazy because, the San Gabriel Academy is not that far.
San Gabriel Valley is not that far. Yeah, San Gabriel, you're right. San
Gabriel, it's not that far, right? It's like you're in this world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, San Gabriel Academy just won a CIF title.
They did.
Right?
They did.
But a few miles away, this whole other world opens up to you. And, you know, like, I love the story, right? Like, you can get to anywhere from wherever you come from, first off, right?
Yeah.
And then second off, just when you commit to doing something, this whole other world opens up to you. And gives you a limitless opportunity and something, some ambition to go after. I think that's the story of everyone that needs to have. It's like, go and take a chance. Go and volunteer coach at the YMCA and figure it out and commit fully to it. And then this whole world opens up to you.
Yes.
And so did you end up going to college or coaching college or do?
So after that period, doing a little bit of AAU, and then finishing out at Valley Torah, I did one more year after. Okay. Because when I was at Valley Torah, my first 2 years, I coached the freshman team, and then the year after, he let me coach two teams. He let me coach a frosh-off and a full freshman team. And my first year, I had a group of kids that some of them didn't ever play. Like, there was one kid, his name's Akiva, never played basketball, you know, in his life. Like, his mom just put him in there, like, hey, let's try it out. And he developed and he grew to become an all-league player by his senior year. And another kid, Lee Arell, same thing, like those two kids were like, I was like, okay, like they can be pretty good. They can help us because they became pretty good role players their junior year for us. So I was like, well, like I'm a pretty loyal guy. Like I love the people that I'm around, like a little bit biased for that, you know? So I was like, I'm gonna stick it out with them. you know, this was my first group, you know, so I stayed with them for their senior year. And it was great, you know, to watch them grow and kind of finish out in that way. And those guys will forever be, you know, in my hearts too, you know, so, and I still talk to them from time to time too. Yeah, so that's awesome. That's great too. So, after that, I was trying to make the jump to college, trying to be a GA. And was just trying to find every single way to do that. I knew that I wasn't going back to Valley Tour at the time. And there were a couple places that I was supposed to land at. I'm not gonna say where, but I did end up meeting the head coach, like in his office, and he was like, yeah, like we're gonna get this done. And he was like, it's done and stuff like that. I was like, okay, great, like this is where I'm gonna be. And then later on, like he gives me a call. I completely understand because he had guys that he coached that wanted to go back.
Got it.
So it was me, a guy he didn't know, or former players that wanted to come back in BGAs and stuff like that. Like at the time, I was like, dang, that sucks. Like I wanted to go there. It was a really good program. I was really excited for it. But the more I grew, the more I understood.
Right.
And then I was trying to be like a volunteer assistant at another Division I college. Kind of didn't work out. And then eventually, Scott Waterman, who took the job at Academy of Art, gave me my first opportunity to be a volunteer assistant over there at the Division II level.
Nice.
So I made the jump to college, and I was so excited for it. And
where is that?
It's in San Francisco. It's
Yeah, this is AC Carmen went there.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I talked to AC all day. Yeah, so he went there for a little bit too. Yeah. And he's doing an amazing job, by the way.
Absolutely. Shout out AC.
Yeah, shout out AC.
We know you watch the show every week, bro. So we shoot you out.
So he took a chance on me, you know. Coach Waterman, who is also killing it now. Like when we first came in there, it's funny because I came in right when Coach Leor Schwartzberg came in. And then when Coach Waterman came in, it was his first time too. And what he's doing over there is like, you don't have facilities. Like we have a warehouse to go practice in. You got to take a tram 30 minutes to go practice in a warehouse. And then you don't even have a home gym. It's at Kezar. Yeah. So
crazy.
So it was insane. And the sacrifice that it took to get there, I was like, okay, well, I was wide-eyed, still young, trying to figure it out, never been in college athletics before. It was a lot for me, you know, and then throw on the fact that I had to work just to make rent out there, just to live like in a small room with some friends from my friend. Like I had a friend that was in the area that had friends out there. Mm. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that can help with their rent or whatever. So I kind of like just slept on the floor or whatever. Because it didn't matter, because every morning I would have to wake up at like 4:50 a.m. just so I could take the bus, and then take the bus to the BART, and then from the BART I had to walk about 30 minutes just so we can get to the front of the building, and then we would take the tram 30 minutes to go get to practice, come back, work in the office and whatever Coach Waterman needed at the time. And then after that, because I needed to save money, I also worked along that river where like the Giants Stadium is. I had to walk about 30-40 minutes just so I could work part-time somewhere up until like 10 o'clock. And then
did you even feel it at the time? Like
it was like adrenaline. It was like a rush. I was like, I love this.
That's awesome, man.
It was a lot.
I love the sacrifice, man. People don't understand what coaching in college is like. My father-in-law asked me all the time, man, why don't you go coach in college? I'm like, for what? I'm like, I don't want that lifestyle. Yeah. Like, no. And I know what you see on TV, but like the guys who coach in college, man, they sacrifice so much.
A lot.
And they grind and, man, thank God for them. And that's why I respect what they do so much. Yeah. But I'm like, I don't know if I want to do, especially at my age now, like, do you want me to see your grandkids? Like, I won't see them.
Yeah.
Like, and so, man, respect, man. And that's, I love that you shared that part because people need to know.
Yeah.
The biggest piece I see, man, is that what a lot of people don't do. You didn't skip steps. You said, I want to go coach in college so I can develop them for college.
Yeah.
That is, you know, most people try to skip that step. Yeah. I know some people come to mind immediately who try to like, hey, yeah, I'm a varsity assistant. Let me work with your best player.
Yeah.
Like, no, man, there's steps to get to that level. Yeah. And man, you took the long route.
Yeah.
You got your master's degree?
I not from there. So okay. I kind of didn't have, I was still trying to figure it out, you know, at the time. So it was a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I had to build so much trust, you know. So shout out Coach Waterman. Thank you for being patient with me because I was still a young kid, you know, going out there. And his roster, there were a good amount of guys that were my age.
Oh, wow.
So, like, trying to coach in some capacity that he would allow me to, you know, like, he gave me a scout as well. It was just like, as I'm trying to talk about the scout, like, I had to lead the guys, you know, there. You know, so it was a lot, but I learned from it, you know, and he gave me that opportunity. And the more he saw me get comfortable with it, the more he kind of just trusted me to do stuff, you know. So that building trust has been, I mean, it's been everywhere for me, you know, everywhere I've been, like, I'm in the role that I'm at, and then it just grows every single time, yeah. You know. So that was an exceptional experience for me. And then COVID hit. Had to go home. I don't know if I would have stayed another year because it's really expensive right. out there to be in San Francisco. So then I kind of just, you know, was at home, and then we were all trying to wait to see what was going to happen with COVID. Got a call from Anthony Santos, you know, who was at Cal State Fullerton at the time. Kind of asked if I wanted to come help out, you know, Cal State Fullerton. And I was like, yeah, like I still want to figure it out. Like, there was Division II, which is really, really good, by the way. Like, Division II basketball is exceptional basketball.
Yes.
And there are a bunch of amazing people that are in that space. So I also needed to see what the Division I level was like, you know, and I was able to go there and kind of see the level of talent that we had there. But we had two really good players there that ended up being really good high major basketball players later. So Dante Maddox Jr., who went to Toledo and then went to Xavier. So he played last night. He did really good last night. And then Latrell Wrightsell, who went to Alabama and killed it his first year. So I went in there and they were freshmen, you know, and it was kind of the same. Like, I came in, you know, at the lowest level. They gave me the title of assistant director of basketball operations, but I was allowed to help, like, you know, develop some guys and, like, work with them on the side. Some of our other coaches, Robert Zawi, who coached at Denver for a little bit, and then Brandon Dunson, who's at BYU right now, they kind of saw, you know, like, how hard that I worked and how bad I wanted it. So they kind of took me under their wing, and they were like, hey, like, can you do this? Or can you do this? Now, what do you think of this? What do you think? And then, like, I'll give them answers at the time, you know, and try my best to do what they're asking me to do. But no matter what, I did it 100%.
Yeah.
Like, I gave it my all, and I would commit to it every single time. Like, they might get it back from me within, like, 30 minutes, you know, whatever they were asking, you know. And that was also when I realized that I needed to become even more well-rounded, because I knew coming from where I was from, I couldn't just be good at one thing or, like, pick a niche. I didn't feel like I could have done that, you know. So I was like, okay, I have to be good at everything to kind of increase my value, you know, to help program and other people around. So, like, I picked up Photoshop. I learned all these Adobe softwares and stuff like that. Like, because now, like, you're creating templates of, like, player development stuff. Mm-hmm. You're creating booklets of, like, your culture. You're creating recruitment presentations, you know, stuff like that, and finding data and analytics and stuff like that, and throwing that in. And
you still do that stuff? We need to hire you. her head pops up. She's like,
it's shoot. I, with my time right now, it's tough, especially right. after July. We'll see. Especially right. when trying to spend more time with Tiffany.
Is that a knock on mic up?
Huh?
It might be, I don't know, because he backed his chair up.
Oh, did I crush it?
It's just a $300 mic, so.
Is it?
If you break it, you know.
It's okay, it'll just come out of our wedding fund just for a little bit.
No, we won't take away from the wedding. I had a $2,000 wedding, by the way.
Did you?
I did. Don't spend all that money. Go get a house. Anyways, we'll go back to that later.
Shoot. A little too late for that. Contract's already signed.
All right, I'm pretty sure. All right. Yeah, so you're at Cal State Fullerton now. You get the Division I experience.
Yes.
And this happens kind of through networking, right? Mm-hmm. You always give an effort so people support you and know your move and keeping those relationships, which are very important. And it sounds like, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah.
And I carry through from you as a high school player. Mm-hmm. Right, waiting for your turn as a sophomore carries you through this coaching journey that you're all in too. Like that is so important to not be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then that well-roundedness, right?
Yeah.
Being able to add value in places people didn't even think you can is, man, that is, I don't know, I just relate to that journey so much. Yeah. It's like, because it happened with me when I built my business, when I built Core. Like, I built my own website. Yeah. I did my own business plans. I did my own accounting. I did my own everything. Yeah. I was literally, besides short of being my own attorney, which I almost tried to do from, you know, Rocket Lawyer online, but I had to build all these skills. Now, when I go into spaces and people are starting their own business, I'm like, oh man, you need this, this, and this. Like, you're thinking about the wrong part first. Like, do this and just, I'm pretty sure you have that with coaching now. I mean, doing it for yourself now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. And like you said, with the whole networking thing, like, it's just crazy just thinking, you know, how my journey kind of went. Just being thankful for everybody, you know, that's been along that path. And, you know, there are ups and downs, you know, along the way, but still learn from those, you know. And just talking about also that well-roundedness, like trying to be better at everything and things like that. One experience that I won't forget was that I got to work with Phil Beckner, where he was working with Damian Lillard for about a week.
Nice.
And that changed everything in the way that I saw, you know. I actually forgot to thank Justin Downer for a little bit at that moment. Thank you, Justin, who's at Point Loma now. He helped me out with that. And Damian Lillard was probably the hardest working player that I've ever seen in my life. And Phil challenged him every day, in every moment, in every rep. He was collaborative with him, but also pushed him, held him to the highest standard. And Dame alone, he took it upon himself to make every rep 1,000%. That was the year that he had that game winner, the sidestep against OKC.
Yeah.
I was like, because after we did a whole hour and a half, hardest workout that you could see, he'd be like, hey, I want to get some shots up near, like, it's like shooting it dang near half court. He was like jumping, doing a squat, then shooting it, like taking his legs out of it, like tiring himself out. He's like, no, I want to do some more. I want to do extra work. I want more. And I'm like, wow. Like, this is what it is, you know? So that experience was really good. But going out of, after college, the plan was to always come back to high school.
Right.
Because it was just jump into college just to see, you know, and then kind of relay it back and teach my kids. And I wanted to be a high school head coach again. I had that itch again.
Let me guess, you went to Harvard Westlake and said, and wrote an inquiry about being the head coach there?
Yes, definitely. It's trying to take David Rubio's job. I was looking at a couple places, Chadwick, when they opened at the time. And then I was really close at the time with St. Genevieve, who went with Coach Delvin Rowe, who I think is doing a really good job over there too. Mm-hmm. So like the almost, the misses, you know, not getting those jobs and those opportunities. It was just like, okay. Like at the time when I was talking to Coach Rubio, it was through Russell. Russell was the one that brought me into Harvard Westlake and kind of introduced me to
Russell Rubio. Payne?
Russell Payne.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I was on the phone with Russell White this morning.
Oh, okay.
I talked to another Russell.
Who is today, also doing an amazing job at Cal Lutheran. And an even another amazing job this the year before with the Pro 16s, winning.
Right, winning
that circuit. Yeah. So, absolutely. So yeah. Well, right when I did jump out, I did coach at LA Elite for a little bit because I reached out to Russell and stuff like that. I was like, hey, all right, I just want to jump back in and kind of meet some people, and I knew Russell was a good dude. And when I jumped back in, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be head coach of a team or anything. I was like, hey, like, let me just be an assistant to somebody. And then that was when I worked with Wolfgang Wood.
Ah, there you go.
And it all comes full circle in terms of my relationships with these guys. And Russell brought me in, and I told Coach Rebebo at the time, hey, I'm still looking for these other opportunities. But eventually it came full circle, and then I started at Harvard Westlake, nice. Which... It was amazing.
Give me your best Rebebo stories. Everybody has them when they come on and they work for him. Your best Rebebo story. What did you learn? What was most fascinating about his coaching and how he runs his program?
Level of detail. He is really detailed. He's really organized. He motivates his guys really well to be able to get the best out of them. You know, he plans for everybody. He plans for other teams. He schemes with other teams, and he's a relentless worker. He really wants it.
Yeah,
he wants it so bad, and the guys see that, and they play so hard because they see that, and he's not gonna let up. Right. He's not, and because of that, when you go watch Harvard Westlake games, they don't let up. You know, and it starts from the top. You know, so he's really detailed in the way that he does things. I learned a lot about defense from him.
I sat in two practices and I learned a lot about
Yeah.
I used the terminology, yeah. Like the man, all that.
So he's always growing too. Like he still seeks out a lot of resources. He goes to college practices. Like he's trying to learn from other people. He's always talking from people. So like every year he gets better. If a guy like him tries to seek out, you know, ways to get better every time, not a single person in the world that shouldn't try to find ways, right? Like, 100%. Especially young coaches who, you know, like I said, when I was young, I thought I knew. Then I realized that I don't.
Yeah.
You know, so him being able to be around him and learning a lot of the defensive intricacies of the game and teaching it, holding guys accountable to that standard. There's nobody above the standard for him. Like, he coaches his best players just as hard as he coaches, you know, the 15th guy on the bench.
Yep.
And even the 15th guy on the bench at Harvard Westlake is really good.
Man, I know. I got some guys down there that I don't see the court, so yeah.
Yeah, so everybody gets coached. Everybody gets an opportunity. Everybody has to compete.
Yep.
And being able to kind of see that for the past 3 years was really amazing, and experiencing what we experienced.
A couple of rings didn't hurt.
Just a couple rings. Thank you to, you know, Brady Dunlap, Jacob Huggins, Robert Hinton, Nicholas Amenia, Trent Perry. Oof.
Yeah.
Two McDonald's All-Americans the past 2 years. I mean, having those guys was something amazing. And also, they're amazing kids, too. Right?
Absolutely.
I think during that time, when I went to Cathedral, it wasn't just like, hey, like, you know, We don't just look at guys just solely for their talent. Like, we look at their character too, because I know what it could be like if it doesn't. You know what guys mesh. You know who you can win with, and are you okay with losing with some of these guys? Like, we're spending so much time together. You know, I want to like the journey. I want them to enjoy the journey. You know, so all of that is really, really important. And I think at Harvard Westlake, they do a really good job of giving them that platform, just not just basketball, because there are a lot of really good sports there too.
Yeah.
Like their girls soccer team wins, their water polo wins, you know, all their other sports win. And I think that's just, when we talk about the people around you, people like to say like Harvard Westlake, you know, money, stuff like that. Like, no, the people are driven. People are driven. When everybody around you is driven to win and do it for the right reasons and do it the right way, you're going to get the right results. Terry Barnum wants to do it the right way, and he wants to really win. He wants to help these kids. We had an exceptional weight room program.
Yeah.
You know, we had Dunford, who's exceptional training staff. Like Jeff and Dunford, like, our guys were healthy. our guys were strong, our guys were ready for playoff all the time.
This has been brought to you by Harvard Westlake.
You're right. I loved my time there. I mean,
No, it's amazing because it's the standard, man. And you said it, like, yes, it costs a lot of money to go there and they're able to afford resources, but it's also the people that they have there. And I asked that question on purpose just because it doesn't take money to be a school like that, right? It takes the people who are invested and committed to the process. The resources definitely help. But at the end of the day, if you get a team around you, administration who understands, and a bunch of people who want to win and compete and be held to a standard, man, you could create something very special.
Absolutely.
And I took a note out that book with CORE. Like, I literally got people who were better than me in almost every area, pretty much every area. I no pride. Hey, I got a football guy who's better than me. Hey, you just run the football. You tell me what to do. Yeah. Baseball, same thing. I got guys who are elite in their area, and so now we grow together, right? Yeah. And we've produced some dudes from middle school, right? We produced some middle school dudes. It's up to you guys when you get to high school, and you guys better take them and run with them. But they end up doing pretty well. But
because the foundation's strong.
That's it. And that's what it was about.
And you're not just there during the middle school times.
Yeah. No,
you're still here.
Still on the phone today. Still on the phone right before the show, right?
Yeah.
Trying to help these kids. And that's what it's about, man. This is a thankless job most of the time. And people who are professionals in other areas see it as just sport.
Yeah.
And it is a lifestyle. It is a culture. It is what we do. And you sharing your journey just to become a high school coach. You know, it wasn't like you were trying to be an NBA coach and you sacrificed sleeping in a room on the floor in San Francisco for a year. Yeah. And, you know, it's probably the same thing at Cal State Fullerton. I'm sure it wasn't the easiest
thing. I commuted from home. Okay. It was during COVID.
Okay, cool.
Time.
Okay.
That was so okay.
There was no traffic. Great. It worked out.
It was a drive, though. Shoot. Right. From that's Orange County. But, yeah.
But there you go. That's still a sacrifice, the driving. Yeah. And just being an assistant, even after being at the Division One level and coming down to be an assistant at a great place. And so all that sacrifice and all the years you put into it to become a head coach now in Southern California at a greatly located school.
Yeah.
What things are you taking from all of your coaching experience, right? From the Academy of Arts, your time at Valley Torah to Harvard Westlake, all those places, and making it your own, though. Mm-hmm. I know you've taken a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
What are you making your own that you didn't see in those other places that you wanted to make unique to you and your culture?
Yeah, there's a lot. I think the main thing for me when I went over to Cathedral was to just be myself. I think all these people along my path have helped shape me to be a better person, to be a better coach. I saw the good, the bad, the ugly throughout the basketball space because we know how it could be. And just seeing the ways that I could continue to do right by our guys and continue to develop them and invest in them and care for them. And those are huge parts of the way that I kind of approach everything, especially with the kids in our program. So everywhere that I've been, they cared about their guys, you know, especially at a smaller school. When you go to smaller schools, like it's just you.
Yeah.
It's just you, you know. At Harvard West, like, we cared and we invested. Like, throughout, guys get better. Kids will play JV their first year.
Yep.
Isaiah Carroll played JV his first 2 years. Yep. Now, if we were to scale it back 5 years, he'd probably be a surefire Division I guy. Right. The way
he was a baseball player first, too.
Yeah.
He just started playing basketball, pretty much.
Yeah.
So,
just investing in guys and just believing in them. Yeah. You know, the structure in the organization is a major part as well. Making sure there's a clear pathway, and the families and the kids can see it, and see where this is going. You know, and there was a lot of cleanup work my first year at Cathedral, along with trying to introduce a lot of things and, you know, also being mindful and aware of, like, we're not like other places that I've been either. You know, Academy of Art, we didn't have the facilities. Harvard Westlake, we had everything. At Valley Torah, we didn't have our own gym, and our school is like the size of this building. You know, so just being mindful of all those things and trying to build something that fits what our culture at that school is. And Cathedral, the thing that made me fall in love with it even more was like, they're prideful, they're passionate about their school, and they love their school. The alumni love their school, the community loves their school. When administration and the teachers walk in to the school daily, they love the kids there. You know, and the kids that are there, they, you know, they're still kids sometimes when, you know, when they do their thing, it's all boys school. But after their time there, they always reminisce and love their time there. So it's just like, okay, like this is a special place. And it has a lot of love and care. So let's make that the forefront of it and invest in the kids that do come to Cathedral. And, you know, just build it from where they want it to be as well, and create a special place for them so people continue to come back and see how special it can be for years to come.
What taught you humility? That's what you give me, a sense of humility, right? You talked about it a lot, just wanting to learn more and, you know, removing that pride over the years, and even how you talk about even with the kids, there's a sense of humility that you're invested into the greater part of it that's outside of basketball. Where does that come from?
The fact that I never thought that I would ever get here. I would tell Russell all the time. I even told Coach Rubibo, I was like, I never thought I would be at this level of basketball ever. I never thought I was going to be good enough. I never thought, I've never seen it in front of my face before. I've never collaborated with it, coaching the players. I remember when I was in high school, I would show my dad like highlight videos of other really good players as if they were like my year, you know, like Andrew Wiggins, Akil Carr.
Akil my favorite, Carr.
Ooh. Yeah, my favorite one, actually, a little bit of sleeper, Ryan Harrow.
Oh, man.
I love that mixtape. That was great. But that was like, I just put these guys up in a pedestal. I was like, oh, like Seventh Woods. I was like, whoa, like that's amazing. You know, and then like throughout my time, you would see the Cassius Stanley mixtapes, you know. So to get to where I am, it was just like, whoa, like I can't believe, you know, I'm here, you know, and I don't take it for granted. And I know that, you know, along my path, you know, when I was younger, especially going through it, like there was that sense of arrogance that I thought I knew. And I never forget that, because the people along my journey, they just empowered me to continue to work and do those things. And it was always building that trust through that work. Like Lior Swartzberg, my 4 years there, like eventually he only wanted me to be at varsity just to help with scouting and coaching the guys there. Because he knew that all I wanted was the best for the program. I just wanted to win just as bad, right? Same with when I went to Academy of Art, you know, eventually I was able to get in the groove of how we do things there. And then he started to trust me a little bit more there and gave me more responsibility. And then it kind of led into Cal State Fullerton. I was just doing my thing there. And then they saw how hard I worked. They gave me more. And then kind of went over to Harvard Westlake. And Coach Rubibo, my first year, because there were other assistants ahead of me, Anthony Brown, who had a baby at the time. And then he had to spend some time with his kid. And then Russell, he broke his foot. So then it was literally just me and Coach Rubibo just talking to each other, and we just built that trust from there on. You know, I think he also saw the fact that, like, it's not just him that thinks about the program all the time and how we can, you know, get better, and how bad I want to win, you know, and the amount of time that I put into it. And I think, you know, all those, everybody around, they kind of just saw, like, I wanted it just as bad, you know, with them and for them and stuff like that. And this is our program. And I think some coaches worry about that, you know, like, you know, this guy is just working, you know, with the program in that capacity or whatever. But like, nah, like, shoot, when I went to the Harvard Westlake game, you know, the other day, like, I feel what they feel. I want what's best for them too.
Right.
You know, I went to Wolfgang's CIF championship game. Like, shoot, I almost wanted to cry, you know, after that. Like, those relationships, like, I care about these people, and I give a lot of credit to the people that I've met along the way that have helped me to get to where I am today, you know. And I think, hopefully, you know, as we continue to build this thing out, I can make them proud too, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Man, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. We discussed a little bit before the show just the state of basketball.
Yeah.
And how, you know, the media kind of controls that, what we talk about, you know, the barbershop talk of basketball, right?
Yeah.
And different things. What are the most pressing things that you see in the state of basketball today? And what's the concern, but what's the solution also, mm-hmm. do you think, where we can improve, you know, especially here in Southern California?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the discourse around the state of basketball right now, with the product being bad or whatever it is, or the fact that we're shooting too many threes and all these things, I think the coaching, you know, as good as it's ever been, you know, I think the players are as skilled as they are, right? Like, but it also doesn't take away the fact that, yes, like, kids are taking, or players are taking games off and things like that. Like, we want to see them play. Like, both things can be true. I just think that speaking the truth of everything is a lot more important than picking a side. I feel like people pick a side.
Yeah.
It's like, if you just think the older generation of basketball, you know, is the greatest, which, you know, and I'm sure, like, it was amazing, right? But, like, it doesn't mean that just because you picked that side doesn't mean that you have to kind of speak badly about what we have in today's age. Yeah. You know, it's there's so much that goes on in basketball now. There's so many components that have to go. There's so much pressure that we put on a lot of these coaches and a lot of these players. A lot of these players get so much pressure, and it's just like, I saw the other day, it's just like, oh, he gets paid XYZ, you know, NIL. You know, who cares what he feels? It's just like, he's still a human being.
Right.
Yes, he's supposed to perform. Yes, he's paid to play basketball, right? But shoot, at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that you can talk about them in that way. They're people too,
yeah.
You know? They're going over there to help your program still. Yes, you're helping them financially. They're like, everybody has a job, right? Like, it's, and they're kids, you know? And coaches, they feel the pressure too. You know, I used to think coaches, when I first started, I was like, they get about like 5 years. A couple years ago, they get about 3 years. I think you get about like 2 years now.
Maybe, right.
Maybe. Some guys are getting let go after their first year.
Yep.
You know? And it's a lot. I mean, the people around it, I think the media just thinks that, like, let's find the next solution. You know, like, how about we build it out, like, positively?
Yes.
You know, give them time. Like, people are gonna struggle. It happens. Like,
that's part of life. That's the good part of life, is the struggle, is the adversity, is the growth. Remember, John Wooden was a loser before he was a 10-time champion.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the days where it's okay to make mistakes and to struggle, and for kids to grow, for coaches to grow, and seeing people develop in life. You said your first team won zero games. You're a high school coach now in Southern California. Like, the you know, and you just kept pushing. I think, man, what you're saying is the truth, right?
Yeah.
Let's just speak the truth. Let's speak the facts.
Yeah.
I think people with major influence have opinions, and they need to watch how they say things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do it for ratings, and that's the entertainment side, right? That's what feeds the pockets, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a level of responsibility that comes with that, and you can still get the ratings that you look for. You can still get, you know, the respect of everyone by stating, like, I don't know anybody didn't like Brian Gumbel. He just told the truth. He told people stories. You know, like, and he was the highest rated sports show for a long time.
Yeah.
It's always possible. And the pressure is the big one for me. I mean, coaches, you're a grown up. yes, there's pressure.
Yeah.
At the same time, perform, figure it out, know what you're doing, have good communication. But the pressure on these kids is even more important because they're feeling the responsibility of an adult when their frontal lobe is nowhere near formed.
Not even close.
Not even. Yeah. And it's like you're putting all the pressure on them to feed their families, to be a certain type of player and kid, and they lose the fun. And that's why, you named some players earlier who don't even know where they play basketball anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And they were like lit some dudes.
Yeah.
But that pressure and that the lack of support for the holistic approach to a kid is gone. And not the fun and the love of the game. Like, LeBron loves basketball. That's why he's lasted this long. That's why he's been through a lot, but he still loves this game.
Yeah.
And that's why he's great. Yeah. Kobe loved the game until... Oh, his whole body was breaking apart. He loved the game. And that's what made them special, is that their love and passion for this game. They don't even feel pressure.
Yeah.
Because they're so in love with the game. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we have to direct kids. And they're going to be as good as they're going to be.
Yeah,
we can put them in the gym and all that. Like you said, Dame Lillard is full workout, still getting extra shots.
Mm-hmm.
When your kid's doing stuff like that, that's how you know.
Yeah.
That's how you know.
Yeah.
You can't force them to do stuff like that. That's something you do, you develop as they grow up.
Yeah.
But if they're not doing it once they get into this teenage stage, I don't know if they're ever going to do it, man.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And it's got to be a normal thing for them.
Right.
Right. Like when extra work, they don't even see it as extra work anymore. It's what I do.
Yep. Yes. Yes. Like me, I can just coach. I don't. When I'm on the floor... It is what it is. I'm coaching. It's not like, oh man, I gotta go train this next kid. Yeah. Like, no, I'm like, oh, I get to train. Yes.
Exactly.
Like, I get to develop somebody again. Yeah. Like, man, that love is different. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. Man, thanks for sharing your journey, man. We're gonna call this How to Become a High School Coach and make this a course that you could buy for coach. So no, thank you for sharing that part of your journey and just being you, man. Like, you're the example, man. Like, seriously, for anybody who wants to do anything, not just basketball coaching, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Humble yourself and dive all the way into what you're doing and don't be distracted. I'm sure you had distractions on this journey, but you didn't let them impact where you were going.
Thank you.
Dope stuff, man. Dope stuff. We're gonna hop into the next segment, my Rushmore. All right, so your Mount Rushmore, we're gonna do food, okay? So your top four, let's say your top four foods or
cuisines, I guess.
Cuisine. There we go. I like it. Top four cuisines of all time.
There are a lot of great ones. Me, coming from where I come from, with my roots, a lot of Asian food.
Yeah.
living in the 626, there are tons of cafes that are out late nights, Chinese food, Taiwanese food, you have your Korean barbecues, spanning to your Japanese food. Like, there's a multitude of great things that you can eat in my area. But generally, the Vietnamese food, you know, you have, you know, your pho, you know, your banh mi's, you have your spring rolls, all those things. Like, and generally, you know, if I eat a good amount of them, it's a little bit healthier than the other foods that I'll usually eat compared to the fast foods, because as a coach, sometimes you like to just grab it and go.
You're right. In and out, man.
Yeah, you go in and out, or you go to some of those big sports complexes, and you just have your Farmer Boys or your McDonald's around on the way, because... I gotta go, coach. Let me go to the drive-thru real quick.
Yeah.
The Korean cuisine. I think a lot of teams that I've kind of been around now, like, they're just like, oh, let's go to Korean barbecue now. You know, like the all-you-can-eat stuff. Like those kids, they get a lot of protein, a lot of that, and they've really started to enjoy it. So, like, I'm glad to kind of see like Korean food kind of creep up for some basketball players in that area. Then I have my Chinese food. There's just so many dishes. My grandma always cooked growing up. She's the best as well. I mean, like, her food, there's nothing better. But when I can't get that for her. You know, there are a ton of places around that area. And then, shoot, for my fourth one, it might be Japanese food mostly because Tiffany loves Japanese food too. So we'll go out there and we'll get whatever she wants.
What's included in Japanese food? I know sushi. So, right.
Maybe sushi. I think I would count kind of the ramen in there.
Okay.
You have like your rice bowls, your specific rice bowl. You can get like tempura. You can get your chicken. You can get any of the specialty ones that they have. You know, I think everybody kind of has like their own form of like dumplings in a way.
Yeah.
Right? Like Chinese, like we have our dumplings, and then you know, Japanese, they have like their gyoza. Koreans, they have like their own, I forgot what it's called, but they have like their own form of it too. So it's like, you know, they all have their specialties.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So generally those four.
Yeah.
I like to cycle between all those, and you know, being getting married in July, it's what would you like today, honey?
Nice. Nice. You got all the cuisine.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, for me, man, my number one is Mexican food. I don't know if it's growing up in Southern California. Shut up, Karina. growing up in Southern California, you know, you get that. My mom had just, my mom cooked Mexican food for whatever reason, along with everything else. But I could literally go to Mexican food places and just every day. Let's just think about how the cheese melts. Okay. But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just amazing. Probably got to go like Southern food. Just, yeah, you know, stuff you grew up, I grew up on. You know, the fried chicken and the catfish and all that kind of stuff. Just the flavor and taste. Like, I don't eat it as much anymore, just trying to be healthy. Yeah. And we know. And thank God for air fryers where we can kind of act like we're actually frying food and we're not.
I love my air fryer.
Yeah, man, it is the truth. So all that kind of food, trying to think, you know, I'm big on Thai food now cause my wife is, so she eats it probably twice a week. Like she's a fiend. So I have to get it. And so I started to like it more and more. Our kids love it.
Yeah.
Thai food would probably be in there. And then the last one, where else do I eat a lot? Can I just say breakfast? I'm gonna say breakfast food.
I love good breakfast.
I can eat breakfast any time of the day.
Breakfast burrito anytime.
Doesn't matter. All day. So yeah, breakfast would be other cuisine, I guess. You know, that's man. I might leave here and go get some breakfast food actually.
Oh, yeah.
So watch. We're missing NCAA games. I'm sorry for scheduling this. It's okay. I'm crazy. So yes, Karina, what's yours? I'm actually interested in knowing what's your
favorite food.
Your cuisine, yes, your favorite.
Mexican food, but it has to be my mom's, because I refuse to pay for something my mom can make better. Two, Thai food. Three, I'd say Japanese. And then four, I'd say Central American breakfast.
What's different about Central American breakfast?
Mexicans will, like, everybody knows well with rancheros.
Yeah.
But Central Americans, like Puerto Ricans, Salvadorians, Guatemalans, they do, like, plantains with like black beans and an egg.
For breakfast?
For breakfast.
Oh, wow.
It's really, really fire. Because it's more tropical, which Mexicans don't.
You get a lot of protein in that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Good for you. There you go. Sweet. My next segment is Fix the Net. A misconception about Coach Alex that we all need to make clear. So you let us know what it is, and then you tell us what the truth is, and then you can fix the net.
Dude, I don't know. I mean, there are a lot. I think one,
I've never heard anybody say anything negative about you. Just so you know, in my years of knowing you, so I don't even know what it is. But go ahead.
I mean, as I was kind of going through my coaching journey, and I don't want it to be like just an Asian thing, but like I do feel when I communicate with other Asian coaches, it kind of leads up being the same. Is like, it's either just an X's and O's guy, right? Where, you know, you can study X's and O's, and then like I also didn't play at a super high level, you know, and I own that. I'm okay with that.
Right.
You know, I like to be honest about it. You know, I wouldn't want to be pigeonholed in that, and I just wanted to make sure that, like, as I wanted to become more well-rounded, I kind of just squashed that a little bit. So, like, it was an X and O's thing. You know, some people would be like, oh, he didn't play at a high level, so how would he know?
Yeah, I hate that thing. And that's why I say you did it the right way, because some people do try to, like, skip steps, but you went and got the education to be able to coach at that level. Even though you didn't play, you're able to lead and teach at that level. Yeah. As we know, some of the best players suck at coaching.
Yeah.
And so don't blame another guy just because he didn't play, physically play at a level when you can coach it.
Yeah. And then it led into analytics a little bit, because then I was like, oh, okay, like, I have to learn about analytics because that's becoming an important part of the game. And then it'd be like, oh, just analytics or whatever. Like, you know, if some people get pigeonholed, you know, in a way that people want to keep you in a box. Just, I don't know if it's because they don't want to see, you know, people kind of grow or, like, kind of get the step above, you know, in a way. But yeah, I mean, kind of that's what I dealt with growing up, going into the profession, was like, oh, he just does this. This is what he's for. But, you know, along the journey, it was just, I got to get better at this. I got to get better at this. Like, I can't just be this, you know? And at the forefront of that, it was always just about caring about the guys along that journey. And that, you know.
And none of that is true. He's a well-rounded coach that knows exactly what he's doing, running his own program against a bunch of guys who applied for the job, and he got it. So in y'all faces. So go ahead and fix the net. Sweet. It's okay. That happens. It literally is for that soccer ricochet.
I love passing the rock back, though.
This is where we flip the script. You become the interviewer. So two questions for me could be about anything in the world.
You answered it ever so slightly. And since this is a free session, you know, since I am getting married in July.
Okay.
Okay.
Did my mic mess up?
I don't have my notepad or anything like that.
It's for recording.
Okay, perfect. Going into my first year after I get married in July, what is some advice that you would have for
first year? Sure.
Yep.
Man, okay. Up to you and your preferences. Don't have any kids. Enjoy your first year just being married. Mm-hmm. That's number one, if you can. After you have kids, marriage changes, period.
Yeah.
There's another whole human that you have to split your love with and for. Mm-hmm. So try to really enjoy each other. Go on vacations, go on experiences. This is in the first few years, really, but this first year, really. And get to know each other again.
Yeah.
And do not argue. I say this all the time. Do not argue about anything that you're not going to divorce her over. Mm. You're not going to divorce her, so don't argue. Mm-hmm. That is my rule. Just talk about it. Everything's a conversation. Most things in marriage, you cannot fix. Mm-hmm. There are discussions. It's because of how you were raised, how she was raised. You guys see life a different way. And there's certain things that there's no compromise for. Mm-hmm. But what you do is you just continue to talk about those things. So there's an understanding. So if it does happen, you're in an understanding place.
Yeah.
And man, just be her best friend. It sounds like you guys have a great connection already.
Yeah.
Continue to be her best friend. Yeah. Don't let the title and the tag of marriage change what you guys have been for each other. And to get to the point to where you're proposing to her and being engaged. Just let it be another level of commitment and another level of like, I don't know. For me, I like new stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So in my marriage, it's like, oh, it's year 11. We got to do this, this, and this. I make up stuff, right? Like, it's a new year. Let's get it. And so, man, just enjoy, truly enjoy each other, being in each other's space, experiencing life with one another, and grow, man. I mean, this is it's simple, but it's tough.
Yeah,
because people get consumed with everything else. But
it's tough, but it's okay. It's the best thing. I mean, she was with me when I first got started going into the college coaching thing. So for my first 2 years, I made $0. Yeah, I mean, she's been with me through thick and thin for everything, and she actually continues to inspire me too because she's a teacher.
Oh, nice. Yep.
And while we get to coach the guys that we have, she teaches, you know, 30 something kids at a time. And when she was getting her journey started too, I would see her recordings because she would have to do some evaluations. I'm like, wow, like she loves these kids too. Like if you think that I love and care for the kids that I coach a lot, she pours that into every kid that she has there. And it inspires me to be a better coach and a better person too, you know? So, yeah, no, that's, it is beautiful.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Sweet. I guess my next question, it could be a little bit basketball centric.
It can, yes, it can, absolutely.
In today's day and era of navigating kind of just, people are starting to see the end goal a little bit clearer in terms of like all the NIL money, like, it's just so lucrative now.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much money being thrown around and stuff like that. And then, like, obviously, you know, the parents around it, they kind of see that and some fall into it. Some stay away from it. Some just don't know. What would be your advice as they kind of navigate through that and just trying to make sure that they're in a good headspace and making good decisions and stuff?
Yeah, you get NIL money from being a good basketball player.
Yeah.
So keep it about the basketball. Right. You have people in these spaces now who are going to definitely help you along your journey to build your brand, your personal brand and all that to afford you more opportunities. But what started them even talking about you receiving NIL money has to do what you do on the basketball court.
Yeah.
And so keep the main thing the main thing. Secondly, you don't always need an agent to sign every contract. Just get an attorney, man. Like, there's agents who are stepping in, and you don't need any license to be an NIL agent.
Yeah.
We're literally just getting money because money that you were already going to get, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's certain reasons to have an agent when dealing with NIL, depending on the level of player you are versus oh, I should get an agent because it's going to help me. Yeah. I literally heard a story yesterday of a kid who went to a high major school and the agent told him, hey, commit to the school first. Once you get on campus, then we'll worry about the NIL because you'll be there. You'll have better leverage because they see you're committed. Right. Total opposite. Yeah. The coaches were like, I'm not giving you any NIL. You've already signed.
Yeah.
Literally, that was the advice they gave, and it's for a major agency, the person who did that. And I'm like, you didn't, like, just use me. I don't want any money from you.
Yeah.
I'll help you with it. I know what this is supposed to look like. I have friends who are attorneys who will look over contracts and make sure it's good. Like, you don't have to go with these agents who have shiny toys and promising you all these things. Really, really ask around.
Yeah.
Don't go to the first meeting and sign a contract.
Yeah.
And really understand that space. And there's some really good agents out there who do go in there and raise your value and make sure your contract is straight and those types of things. So I think there's more bad ones than good ones right now because it's new and you don't have to have a license or any prerequisites to get that NIL money. So, but most importantly, it comes when you're good at basketball.
Yeah.
That's it. Get good at basketball. Have a social media presence and build up your social media presence with things that you want to represent in the marketplace as you grow. And have somebody do that professionally. Like, just get the help. And if somebody's trying to be your NIL agent, make sure that's part of your deal. It's like, okay, you help me with my social media. So make sure I have all the stuff on my page that needs to happen for me to make money. Like, put that into your contract. Leverage who you are as a player to maximize that space. And I think there's going to be some things that are going to change that NIL space. Right now, it's the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
Those things are probably going to change. Ryan Silver has that NIL conference, man.
Yeah.
And I think it's already sold out now for this Final Four. But, man, that thing is so informative just on where the space is going, how people are handling things, and where the money really goes. It still only goes to, like, the top 5% of players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, colleges will have their funds, and everybody gets some type of thing. So that's going to be awesome. But guess what? Colleges aren't recruiting high school players. So you're years away from that, unless you're in the top 100, top 150.
So rough.
And so, you know, it's adapting.
Yeah.
It's knowing that, okay, I'm a high school player. I'm not in the top 150. I'm going to shoot my shot every time. I'm going to go to every camp. I'm going to try to play, you know, get in front of these coaches. Don't lose the dream of being a Division I player at all. But now start planning for those junior college years where they don't count against your 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, what junior college am I angling at?
Yeah.
Start paying attention to the top programs in the country that are in junior college and the coaches and how they develop and where they're located. Some of them are in the middle of nowhere where it's freezing cold and you got to walk through snow. And
got good basketball there, though.
That's it. and they're going to get you to the next level, yes, because of their connections inside of Division I. So we have to start paying attention to those things. Yeah. The people who used to maybe even walk on to Division I, like, that opportunity is not going to be there anymore.
Yeah.
Keep working towards that, but have the development plan long term. And yeah, we could talk about that all day too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Talking with the JC thing, shoot, we're lucky we have a lot of really good JC coaches
right here. Yeah.
Like Perry out at Fullerton.
Yeah.
Amazing job.
Yeah.
You know,
his guy just signed to St. Bonaventure. His big just signed St. Bonaventure. Yeah.
And then the people around him too, like Devin Uglin, who's all across California. Knows every
kid.
Knows everything. You know, and then I think San Francisco, they just want it. You know, they do a really good job. They're good year in, year out too.
Yep.
Citrus is good. So, like, there are a bunch of really good coaches out there too in JC. So, we're lucky, I think, in Southern California.
100%. And I mean, the biggest part of Southern California is that, you know, there's no housing really for these kids, Virginia College, unless you go to Allen Hancock. Shout out Allen Hancock. Yeah, they do a good job. But that's part of it. And so look out of state.
Yeah.
Go find the schools where they do get a full ride for junior college and where you're going to develop as well. Like, there's so much more to consider now with the way that these coaches are recruiting. And so, make sure you guys' eyes are open for those things.
Yep.
Hey, call me or Coach Alex. We'll help you. This is what we do.
So. Got you guys.
Awesome. And you got your 24-second shot clock. That's your camera right there. Let the people know where they can find you and any message that you have for them.
You can find me at Cathedral High School. For my social media, it's Coach Lou. Lou is spelled L-I-E-U. Usually people spell it wrong. It's okay, though. And if you're ever around the San Gabriel Valley area, you'll probably see me eating around there and being in my community.
Awesome, man. Awesome, man. Thank you for coming to the show, brother.
Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. That's all we have for you today, folks. We'll see you next time. Peace.